There's something kind of gratifying about a really bad birthday. Toward the garish end of 2016, the year our idols died, I turned 23 alone, failing to read a book in the dim, eggy light of a deserted Chinatown bar. I'd convinced myself that this stoically miserable total non-event was preferable to drinks with a few people mustering faint cries of happy birthday or, God forbid, trying to sing the song, always too slow, always going on longer than anyone wanted, particularly when groaning toward that final protracted lift on the first syllable of the penultimate birthday. I'd hoped that being alone might feel sort of heroic, or at least dignified, or at least grown up. It wasn't any of these. It was the weekend before Thanksgiving, the end of the nothing month of November, and I remember raininess, a vague and unremitting overlay of pathetic fallacy. The sky had a passive-aggressive quality, bruised clouds withholding their light while telling you they were fine, not to worry about them. They knew you didn't really care anyway. Ahead lay the grotesquerie of the reality star who'd soon be eating McDonald's and watching TV in the White House. It was a bad joke in the worst taste. The incoming president was the executive producer of the America show, barreling faster toward the series finale, and the ratings would be great. Later, Zara would say in her deadly deadpan that the good ones had all peaced out because they knew what was coming. Prince, Bowie, Muhammad Ali. Names now, more than a decade later, half forgotten in a world too tyrannized by the present to have time for history. An aggressively cheerful barmaid cajoled me into ordering the house cocktail, which arrived in a small coupe glass, the liquid within an embarrassingly fruity shade of puce, a mocking strawberry spliced and listing down the side, and I sat there with my effeminate cocktail, suppressing a shudder as I felt it sheathe my teeth with sugar. This was 11 years ago, by which I mean about 1,000, because back then I had, of course, zero idea that we were in the before times. My pitiful 23rd birthday and the technicolored year that followed, that color-saturated, richly lit time of the two of them, Paula and Jason, my twin movie stars, who for a moment were truly nothing less than my life. It all seems now to have happened on some discontinued film stock. This is how it goes, I guess. That people who were once more real to you than life itself eventually come to feel like stock photo models in a collection of well-framed shots imprinted on your once impressionable brain. That November, though, I was newly arrived in the city with few friends, or at least nobody with whom I wanted to eat either turkey or birthday cake. After Dartmouth, second least impressive of the Ivies, I'd been anxious enough to delay adulthood as to spend a final school year at Oxford, where my voice became inflected with the rounded vowels of moneyed English youth. The same youth who had ribbed me, paid attention to me, and even kind of fetishized me for being a bloody Yank. In my first months in Manhattan, then, I was frequently mistaken for an English expat. With strangers, I usually went along with this, murmuring the lie, London, with a diffident smile when a cashier or barista asked where I was from. In truth, my hometown was Broomfield, Colorado, a newish agglomeration of prefab-looking housing developments squatting on flat, treeless land in a zone that was neither Denver nor Boulder and was distinguished by nothing but its in-betweenness. If I could offer you a defining image of my adolescence, it would look like this. I'm lying on my bed with the flat screen blaring downstairs, and the little Morrissey who lives in my head is plaintively singing, "And when you want to live, how do you start?"